Hey everybody, this is Pastor Rick's Daily Hope, and we are so glad you're here. As we approach the new year, it's a great time to reflect on your relationship with God, what's behind you, what's ahead, and that's why Pastor Rick has a timely and powerful message for you called How Much You Matter to God. Now, if you've ever doubted your value or wondered about your place in God's plan, this message is for you. So, let's get right to Rick for the first part of this message.
Now, as an evangelist, I spend much of my time with people who totally disagree with me. But does that make sense? I mean, if you have the gift of sharing the good news, you don't just share it with people who already understand it. So I spend much of my time talking to people who totally disagree with me. And I would disagree with them. And I have, you know, they've written all kinds of things about, you know, Rick Warren has had dinner with this religious group or that religious group, or he's had dinner with, atheists or gays or, worst of all, liberals, you know. And, I mean, that's like the highest sin of all. That's the unpardonable one, okay, liberals. And as if, you know, well, then that means I agree with everything, everybody I've ever had dinner with. Well, of course not. Can you imagine if Jesus were alive today, what the bloggers was to say about Jesus having dinner with a prostitute or a corrupt government official or all the other, quote, sinners? He hung out with lepers. These were the offcasts of society that nobody wanted to hang out with. It'd be like people who have AIDS today, who people are, I'm afraid I might get it, so I want to get away as far away as possible. And, Jesus, his answer to all of this was always, hey, the well don't need a doctor. It's the sick people who need a doctor. And Jesus says many times, several times, he actually says, I didn't come for the righteous. I came for the unrighteous. I didn't come for the saved. I came for the lost. I didn't come for people who think they've all got it all together and don't need to be saved. I came to save people who realize they're broken. They don't have it all together. The things don't always work in life. Frankly, people who think they don't need to be saved, I don't have any time for. But I came to be with people who know they need help. I came for the insecure. Now, the truth is, and I've learned this after 30 years of pastoring, everybody is insecure. Everybody in this room, everybody's listening, is insecure. You say, oh, no, I'm not insecure. Oh, really? Let me have 30 minutes with you, and I'll uncover your hidden insecurities. I can do it quite quickly. I'm very good at discovering what people's insecurities are. It's the reason why people don't get help before things get really bad in their life. If your marriage is tanking and going down and you don't get counseling, or your business is tanking and you don't get help, or you got a relationship problem with your parents or your kids and you don't get help, and you don't get counseling. And why do people afraid to go to a counselor? Because of insecurity. What if that counselor reveals something to me that I can't handle, and he points out a truth about myself that I don't really want to know? That's called insecurity. And it's the reason why people wait until it's too late to get help in an area of their life. It's because of their own insecurity. What can they uncover that I can't handle? Now, the truth is, one of your deepest needs in life is to feel secure. One of your deepest needs in life is to feel valued, to feel valuable, to feel like your life matters, that it counts, that it's significant, that you're not just a cipher, that you're not just some kind of zero in life. You want your life to matter. You want your life to have value and significance. And as a result, you're constantly doing two things, evaluating and comparing. And you do it all the time. You do it consciously and you do it unconsciously. You're evaluating yourself and you're comparing yourself to other people. And we compare everything. It's an indoor national favorite pastime of Americans. And the problem is, the four ways that we judge our value are all spurious. They're all false. They're all phony. They're all fake. How the world tells you you determine your value is 100% wrong. So let me just mention them because I want you to understand that your value is not based on what the world says about you. It's what God says about you. Now, there are four things that the world tells you you need to look at if you want to know how valuable you are. You might write these down. The first way we judge our wealth or our worth is by our appearance. And that is, how do I look? And we think, you know, if I look good, then I must be good. And if I don't look so good, then I must not be so valuable. I must not be important. And our society has an entire industry that is built on the idea that your value is based on your appearance. It's called Hollywood. And Hollywood says, if you really are ravishing, you're stunning, you're really gorgeous, you're really handsome, then you're really worth a lot. But if you're not so hot, then you're not. Oh, I'm a poet and I don't know it. Now, the problem with this is there aren't that many really stunning people in the world. I mean, most of us are just normal, average-looking people. In fact, everybody around you is normal, average, except you. You're stunning. And you know it. But you're the only person in this room that actually really is stunning. All the rest of us are just kind of normal looking. Okay, we're just normal people with normal looks. Now, if you only have high value in your life by being super attractive, that leaves most of us out. And the Bible says that's not what you evaluate yourself on. The second false way to evaluate your worth is not appearance, but by affluence. And affluence is, what do I own? And that's the myth of materialism that says, if I have a lot of things, then I must be worth a lot. That if I have a lot of values, then my personal value is a lot. But if I'm poor or I'm broke, then I'm not worth much as a person. Now, I've told you many times, never connect your self-worth with your net worth. Because if you connect your self-worth with your net worth, the recession will cause depression. And I have seen that many, many times. I've seen a lot of people who, when their business hits the toilet, then their personal feeling about themselves hits the toilet. And when they tank in their portfolio, then they tank in how good they feel about themselves. And I'm just not a very good provider, and on and on and on. Your value and your valuables have nothing to do with each other. Your self-worth and your net worth have nothing to do with each other. The greatest things in life, as I've said many times, are not things. But the world tells you, you got a lot of money, you got a lot of stuff, then you are really a valuable person. Not true. The third thing that we judge our worth on is achievement. And that is, what have I accomplished? And if I get a lot of things done, then I feel good about myself. And if I reach a lot of goals, then I feel good about myself. And if I get promoted, or I win a trophy, or I get an honor, and I have accomplished a certain thing, then I must feel good. And this is what creates workaholism. And it drives us because we want to feel good about ourselves, so we're trying to achieve to prove that we are worthwhile. The fourth is approval. And approval, basing your worth on approval, says, how well am I liked? And if I'm liked a lot, then I must be worth a lot. And if I'm only liked a little, then I'm worth a little. And if I'm not liked by anybody, then I'm worthless. That's just not true. Some of you have spent your entire life trying to gain the approval of somebody who's never going to give it. And if you haven't got your parents' approval by now, I'm sorry, you're not going to get it. But here's the point. You don't need it to be happy. Your happiness is not dependent upon the approval of other people. If you build your worth on what other people think of you, then you are going to be devastated every time you get criticized. And it's going to hurt like the Dickens, and you're going to tend to always be going around saying, what will other people think? And if you're always asking that question, what do other people think? You're already a slave to the approval of other people. You've got to learn to trust what God says about you. Now, it is true, psychological studies have shown that you tend to base how you feel about you on what you think the most important person in your life thinks about you. That's where you get most of your self-esteem. What you think the most important person in your life thinks about you. So I highly recommend you make the most important person in your life Jesus Christ. Because he's going to tell you the truth, and he's going to love you unconditionally, and he's not going to say, I love you if, I love you if, I love you if, I love you if, I love you if you love me, I love you if, or I love you because. That's conditional love. Jesus says, I love you, period. In fact, you can't make me stop loving you. Now, the problem with these four things, appearance and affluence and achievement and approval, is that they are all unstable, unreliable sources of security. I mean, let's just go down the list. Our beauty fades. Anybody want to give a testimony on that? Okay, our beauty fades. And if you think you're not looking so great now, wait 10 years. Okay, all right? Okay, unless you're like me on the Daniel plan, and in 10 years, I'm not half the man I used to be. All right, beauty fades, possessions wear out, okay? Successes are surpassed. No matter what goal you reach, somebody's going to break your record. And you're going to feel bad then if your self-esteem is built on that. And other people are going to reject you. No matter what you do, some people just aren't going to like you. That's their problem, not yours. The only solid foundation for self-esteem, for feeling good about you, is understanding how much you matter to God. That's what we're going to look at today, how much you matter to God. And if you get what we're going to look at today, it'll change your life and it will set you free from the expectations of others, from the grip of materialism, from the pressure of workaholism, from the need to have to improve and always look your best at every time. When you see yourself as God sees you, it transforms you. Now, a great example of this is a guy in the Bible named Zacchaeus. And his story is in Luke chapter 19. If you have a Bible, you can turn to Luke 19. It's there on your outline. You can read the verses with me. It's also on the screen. Now, Jesus is going through a town called Jericho. And, of course, large crowds are following Jesus wherever he goes. He's walking through these cities, and crowds are following him everywhere. And there's a guy in this town named Zacchaeus who is the most hated man in the city. And the Bible tells us this story. Luke 19. Jesus was going through the city of Jericho, and a man was there named Zacchaeus. And he was the chief tax collector. And he was wealthy. Now, he wanted to see who Jesus was, but he was too short to see above the crowd. So he ran ahead of the place where Jesus would come, and he climbed a sycamore tree so he could see him. Now, when Jesus is walking through, when Jesus comes to that place, and then there was this sycamore tree, he stopped. It says he looked up, and he said to Zacchaeus, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down. I must stay at your house today." Zacchaeus came down quickly and he welcomed him gladly. Now all the people who saw this, they began to complain. Jesus is having dinner with a sinner. Jesus is staying with a sinner. But Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, and this is at his house, "I will give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anyone, I will pay them back four times as much." And Jesus says to him, "Salvation has come to this house today. This man is a true son of Abraham." In other words, he's the real deal. He's in with us. "And I, the Son of Man, have come to seek and save people like him who were lost." Now, this is an amazing story. Now, Zacchaeus, of the four ways that we judge our value, this guy has struck out on three of them. Okay, he struck out. He is wealthy because of his corruption, but he has struck out in three different ways. In the first place, Zacchaeus doesn't like his appearance. The Bible tells us he was short. In fact, he was so short, he couldn't see above the crowd. And he was shorter than everybody else in the city. In fact, tradition tells us that Zacchaeus was the shortest man in the city of Jericho. In fact, the Greek word here for short describes the body of an underdeveloped child. This man is not just short, like a lot of people are short. He is abnormally short. He's a little person, probably dwarfed. He's abnormally short. an undeveloped, fully developed body. Now, because of that, he's probably teased and ridiculed his entire life about his height. Can kids be cruel and ruthless on the playground? Oh, you can remember it. Kids can be meaner than adults. And on the patio, they can say all kinds of mean things about the way you look or the way you dress or what you did. And probably Zacchaeus' entire life was given hurtful, cruel nicknames. And he learns real quickly, don't worry about the opinions of other people, because he was constantly made fun of. He didn't like his appearance. He's abnormally short, stunted. He falls short. Second, Zacchaeus was not liked by anybody else. So the approval factor is zero. In fact, he was the chief tax collector, and that means he's hated by everybody. Now, tax collectors are never popular people. I mean, you don't just call up the IRS and say, come over for dinner and do an audit. Okay, that's not something you normally want to do. But in those days, it was even worse, because the Roman tax system was 100% corrupt to the core. In the first place, in order to become a tax collector, you had to bribe an official to get that job. Because once you got it, you were going to make an awful lot of money. But you had to bribe an official to become a tax collector. So you had to be dishonest just to get the job. Then, in the Roman tax collection system, Rome didn't care how much you collected as long as they got their percentage. And you could collect 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 10 times as much as Rome required and keep it all for yourself. So really, a tax collector in this days is more like a mafia extortionist. He can come to your house and say, you're going to pay me this amount of money, when Rome's only said this much and he said this much. And if you don't do it, I'm going to throw you in jail. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. And you will pay tribute to me. So everybody hated the tax collectors, because not only did they represent Rome, which was the invading country of Israel, and they were under subjugation by a foreign country, so they hated Rome. But second, the Roman tax collection was corrupt, and you knew that that guy was going to get rich off of you by being dishonest. And you couldn't stop him. He could extort all he wanted to from you. Now, for a Jew, which Zacchaeus is, to become a Roman tax collector is like treason. It's like going over to the enemy's side. No self-respecting Jew would ever become a Roman tax collector. It was unthinkable. Without a doubt, Zacchaeus was disowned by his family, because no family is going to have a son who represents Rome in the most corrupt area of taxes. So he's disowned by his family. In fact, in those days, you were barred from going to worship if you worked for Rome. You could not go to the Jewish synagogue because they believed you had sold out. In fact, Jewish law in that day meant that the Roman, anybody who was a tax collector for Rome, that was considered in the same class as a murderer. So he is not a popular. This is the most hated, unpopular man in the entire city of Jerusalem. So he not only has an appearance problem, he's got an approval problem. He's not doing good. And worst of all, notice it says he was the chief tax collector, which means this is the guy on top who runs the whole scam. You couldn't pick a more hated person in the city of Jericho that Jesus stops to talk to and invite himself to dinner. Now, not only is Zacchaeus, he doesn't like his appearance, and he has no approval. He's hated by everybody. But Zacchaeus doesn't like himself. How do we know that? Because he's not proud of his achievements. He's got all this wealth, but he got it by stealing from people, from extorting it from people. You cannot be happy and guilty at the same time. You cannot give up your integrity and have harmony and happiness in your life. He knew he'd ripped off people. He knew that all his success was achieved by cheating others. So he lost all his self-respect. And he didn't like his life. And he's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of money. But he's a very lonely, very unhappy man. He's miserable, and he feels pretty hopeless about his life. But on one single day, his life does a 180. And in one snap of a finger, bam, his life is transformed. What happens? Jesus shows up.
Thanks so much for listening to Pastor Rick's Daily Hope. You know, your prayers and financial support have a huge impact on millions of people here and around the world. So we really appreciate that. Thank you. And now Rick's going to share a letter from one of our listeners who says Daily Hope is making a real difference in their life.
Today, I want to share with you a very special testimony from one of our listeners named Marquita. And thanks to Daily Hope and your support, she recently asked Jesus Christ to be the leader of her life. Here's her story. So, Pastor Rick, I wanted to let you know that I have prayed the prayer of salvation that you included in the Deepening the Eyes of Faith message. I've been listening to your messages for years. In fact, my child wouldn't even be here today if it weren't for your words. You wrote, "There may be accidental parents, but there are no accidental children." Well, I've given birth to a beautiful baby girl, and she's the light of my life. In fact, it now hurts to remember a time that I was fighting to decide whether I was going to have her or not. But I repeated your words throughout my pregnancy. There are accidental parents, but there are no accidental children. And although I'm a single mom today, with the support of my family, we're thriving. I want to make sure that she grows up to find her purpose and to serve God. So thanks for renewing my faith in God. And as I still try to find and fulfill my purpose, please pray for me and my child. Wow. Marquita, you are so right. God does have a plan and a purpose for every single baby. There are no accidental babies. So I want to take a moment right now and just pray for you in this broadcast. I pray for you and for your daughter. Lord, I'm asking you right now to put your hand of protection, your hand of blessing, your hand of guidance on Marquita and her daughter. And I'm praying for both of them to know your purpose, to feel your presence, to discover your power, to live in your plan for each of their lives. In Jesus' name, amen.
If you'd like to help support Pastor Rick's Daily Hope, generous friends of this ministry have provided a $100,000 matching grant. And that means that every dollar you give to help share the transforming love of Jesus through Daily Hope will be doubled, up to $100,000. But there's only a few more days to have your gift doubled. Anything not matched will be lost. So please give your best gift today. Just go to PastorRick.com. Or text the word HOPE to 70309. Again, that's PastorRick.com, or text the word HOPE to 70309. And thank you so much for your support. Be sure to join us next time as we look into God's Word for our daily hope. This program is sponsored by Pastor Rick's Daily Hope and your generous financial support.